We wanted to talk about the dairy farm, if you wanted to. They said to ask you about the farm. Your farm.
How long have we had this?
Yeah, how long have you had?
Let me see. 96, 76. Oh, about 75 years. 75 or 76. My husband just graduated from high school. And the woman that owned it just inherited. She was a widow. And we were down to church, and she spoke to my husband and asked him if he would like to come up and run the farm for us. I can't quite imagine a 19-year-old, but and his father wasn't a farmer. In fact, he had no connection with farming. His father was a photo engraver and worked in town. But anyhow, they came, the whole family, and they said there wasn't a scratch or a mark anywhere in this house. Yes, it's changed.
And also, if there were any stories that you wanted to talk about, about the farm. Just any stories you wanted to talk about?
Where are we?
Just any stories that you had about.
Have there been any people in your life?
No.
Talk about going for.
Well, I don't know. I guess there were a lot of funny experiences because we had quite a few children here. There were five next door, and at one time we had six here in the house, and five in one house. Well, there were 24 children on this road from that corner down there, up, and all but just three or four of them were relatives.
And wow.
So there were a lot of funny experiences, but I don't know of any particular one right now.
Was it hard?
Was it hard to
run
the farm? Or?
Mom, was it hard to run the farm? Why don't you talk about all the cousins working on the farm and growing string beans and that sort of thing?
Yes. When we came here, this was an apple orchard, and of course the apples wasn't really a full living, and so we grew with beans, and one year they grew squash for the factory. Everybody grew beans around here for the factory for a while. But you couldn't get anybody in Orrington to pick beans efficiently. I couldn't understand it. So every morning I used to get up, by 6 o'clock anyway, and go down to Bucksport and drive around, and the kids would all come running out. You could haul them in a truck then, and I'd bring up a whole truckload of kids, and they'd pick beans all day, and you had to weigh the beans every night and give them their money. And we had to stop. There was a little store down to South Orrington. We had to stop at the store so they could all spend their money. Yes, I took my son down there once. Well, the two of them. And I could plainly see that the oldest one wasn't going to be a good example for the rest of them. So he just couldn't seem to function. So I suggested that he get a pail of water and take around the water and give people a drink if they wanted it, and help the ladies carry their beans. and they thought he was a wonderful kid, giving up his whole day's work just to help them. But, you know, some can and some can't. Yes, the only two that we had from Arrington, they wound the beads off instead of pulling.
How has living here in this area of Maine affected you? I don't know. I'm reading.
Wait, what it said. You tell me what he says. And
you've lived on this road your entire life, but his question is, how has living in Maine affected you, living here?
Why, I don't know. You know, we had a more active life, really. Well, the activity was different. We had a lot of local things that you went to for, and of course we went in town for high school or any other education that we had. I went to the Maine School of Commerce. That's Husson now.
Okay.
He was a young man.
Who? Who Mr. was Husson. Mr. Husson?
When I was there.
Oh, well.
Let me see. The one thing I remember that he taught, a gum-chewing girl and a cud-chewing cow are somewhat alike, yet different somehow. Now, what can it be? Let me see. Oh, it's the thoughtful expression on the face of the cow. I remember him saying that just as plain. That's the only thing I do remember that he said.
What did you go to school for?
What did you go to school for?
I'll show you a picture of where I went to school. No. That's the front of it. But I got a better one. I don't know how anything I want can just disappear.
Those are nice little pictures, though.
Yeah, you could help us.
I could look for the picture while you talk about going to the little schoolhouse. Where
yes,
you went?
We went to a one-room schoolhouse with a little building off to the side that held the wood and the two restrooms. There was no facilities for washing your hands or anything like that. We had a pail of water in the entry to the school for that sort of thing. When I first went, it was just a pail of water and with one of those long dippers that hung up beside it. And anyone wanted a drink, you just... And then the teacher got the idea that everybody should have their own drinking cup. There were too many of us to be sharing one.
Yep.
And so we all had a cup in our desk. And they brought in a covered water container with a faucet. But you know, I don't know that we had any more coals. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the
no,
pictures.
That isn't the one. No. But that's the front of the school.
Yeah, that's the front of the school. There's another one in there, but it doesn't show the whole thing.
Yeah, I've got one there that shows the whole thing.
Where was the school here?
They want to know where the school was.
About a mile up. You can still see where it was, but it's all grown up around it. But if you know, there's old tree, real old trees there that mark the... It's... And the new growth shows. It wasn't a very big school yard.
No. Mm.
We played in the pasture and in the field across from the school.
What did you do for fun at the school, Mom?
What
did you do for fun at the school?
Oh, we played. We had recess. If they were playing a game, everybody had to play because there were so few of us. But the girls jumped rope a lot. And we played baseball. We had a picket fence. And if we didn't have a bat, that fence was so rotten, you could just yank off a picket and use it for a bat. I hated to play ball.
Is that the one that we were talking about?
Is that the one? Yes, that's it. And now there are, well, that's all grown up to trees. But I presume that's the way it looked when my father went there. Because these other pictures are later, where when I and my brother and sister went. And we would, every so often, we'd have a social in the evening when all the parents would turn out and they'd make fudge to sell. And sometimes they'd have a grab bag that were 5 or 10 cents. And we'd all have pieces that we'd say. And the superintendent came in at least once a month and he brought us all a pencil and the teacher a packet of paper. And we were grateful for those pencils.
Yeah.
The parents provided us with pencils and what we didn't need very much.
Who was your teacher?
I had a Mildred Ryder for most of the time, and a Mrs. Gowen that lived... do you know where Gary Quimby lives?
Yep.
Well, that's where she lived there. And Mildred Ryder lived just up above where that trailer is. That was a big set of buildings when I was a child. It was a big house and the buildings went all the way to the barn. There was a big cattle barn and a horse barn. But there was the main house and then a kitchen, then the woodshed, then a garage for her. Well, it was a carriage house, Mildred Ryder got a car. And then it was a milk room and the restroom. You know, they didn't have restrooms in the house. Down to the center, they renovated the school. You know, that's where Hanscoms have their... that's Hanscom's place there, where they have the buses in back of it. They renovated that, and they put 2 restrooms on the back that you had a door. You could go out into that. And I know some of the parents sniffed. They were afraid that would be smelly for the children. But I guess they survived. Mm-hmm. Now, when my father went, they only had school for so long in each of these little schools, but they were right in the middle, and they could go to both because they could walk that far. But when I went, well, when I was five, they were having school in the little school at the foot of King's Mountain. But if I didn't start school till I was six, there were two or three other children on this side of the school. And so they closed the King's Mountain and opened this one, Goodall's Corner School, they called it. So they wouldn't have to transport so many children, because we could all walk.
Right.
And
I'd ask more about the farm and how many animals were on it.
Is there any, would you like to talk more about the farm, or could you talk more about the farm?
Where are we?
More about this, the farm.
Yeah. Do you Mom, talk more about the farm. Like, for example, like Daddy lived across the street growing up with Grandma and Grandpa Howard.
He lived...
And then how...
Down on Stump Lane. He grew up down on Stump Lane. You know where that is? Well, it's closed at this end, but it went right down from the cemetery road. Well, it goes part way. There's a stream down there, and he lived on the other side of the stream. But they had a little bridge or something they could walk across. So he came up to school at the center there.
And then start from when he came to the farm.
He came to the farm when he was 19, when Mrs. Fowler got him to come up and run the farm for her. It was an apple orchard then. But then, she was all alone, and she decided she wanted to go somewhere else winters. And she left her cellar door open one winter when she went, and the dampness came up, and it peeled the paper. And she had a lot of work to do, and she just wanted to just sell this place and get rid of it. Mm-hmm. We had a lease that we signed. And then after I wasn't here. My husband and his family were here. And I think they'd been here about 3 years when the house next to us, to this, became available, and we wanted to buy that, but Mrs. Fowler wouldn't let us leave because my husband had signed the lease. I think legally, I'll bet we could have left because until you were 21, somebody had to sign everything for you, and his father had signed for him. But anyway, we stayed here, and his family moved up there.
So now he wants to hear about how it was an apple orchard, and then what you did, and how you got into cows, and how it is today.
Well, my husband wasn't very fond of apples for a business. From the time he was a child, he liked animals. And he had sheep. My sister-in-law said, She says, I can remember him coming home and waking Father up and tell him about this sheep he bought that he wanted to buy. And did he have any money? Didn't he want to buy a sheep? And they had it pretty well fenced for sheep. But then he came up here. We had a few sheep for a while before we got into cows. We had an old mother sheep. Well, the barn is gone, but you can see from those pictures the big barn we had. And there was kind of a bank there. And that old sheep used to stand up on that bank. And one of my children was just about old enough to walk. And he'd go running right up there, and that old sheep would give him a push, and he'd roll right back down. So we had to pen up the sheep. And then I was trying to think. Well, my husband started buying cows. And then for the rest of my married life, there was always a better cow with a better pedigree and a better, bigger truck. His favorite occupation, every evening, he always studied the pedigrees. All our cows were registered. And we started with the milking shorthorns. And they were beautiful animals. We had a 4-H club, and my husband was very interested in them. But they didn't breed true. You could have a beautiful cow, and her calf might not amount to anything. So he just started selling them off and buying Holsteins. We showed at the fairs. We felt we had achieved when we built that middle barn. Everybody that had any amount of cows that wanted to be part of the whole thing had one of those barns. And you know, after they got it, they didn't like it as well as the one that they built. They didn't build the other half. They built a different one that they liked better and remodeled the first one. What did they call those barns? Doesn't matter. It was the thing. And we had it. But our cows are still registered, but my sons have a different attitude. My husband went to the fairs, and he went to the meetings, and he bought bulls from away, and he studied the pedigrees. And we did get in with one of the leading families, but I don't know. Well, they had a disagreement. My husband said that anything born on this farm had his prefix. You had to have a prefix for all the animals. You only had to have a name with that prefix. And these people wanted any that we get semen like their cattle. They wanted their prefix on the calves. And out west, they all have little hutches like down under the trees, all out. The minute the calf is born, they just take it and drop it in that hutch. And then they never leave that until they're probably 6 months old, maybe. But we didn't like that very well. You know, you had to go down there every day, no matter what, with storming. The pens were made so you could just hang up the pail and leave it. But we found that some little calves didn't know enough to drink from the pail. Or they'd take the nipple on the side and squirt the milk right out onto the ground. So we had to stand there and see that they got all their food and see how they were. And we liked it better having them undercover. But we still kept up with the fairs and the pedigrees. But, and my husband sold them. We sold some to export. We had them go to Japan and overseas, different places. But my husband said, anything I have is for sale. My son says, well, I guess our best cows aren't for sale. So they would sell the poor ones for beef and just keep the good ones. So, and then the children all grew up, so we didn't show at the fairs anymore. And what they do more is raise heifers to prove bulls. You take these new bull semen, and then a judge comes and judges the offspring, and then they use that to which bulls they're going to, the semen they're going to sell for. Mm-hmm.
So how many cows do you guys have?
Can you talk about the number of cows that you have on the farm now?
Now, I asked the other day, I think that's around 180 milking.
Wow. That's a lot.
We got up over 200 for a while. But our morning milker says, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I don't know if I can do that many. We kind of keep it down to what he can handle. Because he comes at around 1 o'clock in the morning and milks, and there aren't too many you can get that will do that.
No.
But of course we have probably 200 calves and bred heifers and dry cows, because that's the number of milking, 180.
Mm-hmm. Can you do the advice one?
About how much milk is that, Mama?
You know, I can't remember. But we have a 1,000-gallon tank and a 500 one. We used to fill them, but I don't think they do now.
Do
I used to have to stand out on a stool and watch that tank so they wouldn't run it over.
And the milk truck comes every other day, right?
Comes every other day, yes.
So you would fill those tanks every other day? Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
I think we have had three people that had to have raw milk for health reasons. And one man had cancer. He used to get a gallon every other day. If they bring their own jug, and you can let them have it. But we don't encourage it because it is quite a problem. But it did seem to make him feel better for quite a little while.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
My grandmother used to tell of when these people had milk, and this woman had a baby, and they couldn't get anything to agree with it. And the doctor told her if she could get some warm milk right from the cow, that might help. So they had a neighbor, and one of them used to go over when they milked and get this bottle of milk and run just as fast as they could to get that milk back for the baby. And you know the baby lived. And now you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And she had another baby, and they had to do the same thing for it.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific advice for people of my generation?
Do you have any specific advice for Alex's generation or young people today?
No, I don't know. Things are so different, and you're expected to know such different things. Everybody says, oh my goodness, this generation is so smart. But they don't, you don't have the basics that we did. I know I was in a store and their computer was down, and I wanted to pay for this little article I bought. It was simple. You just multiplied, divided by two. I bought half a pound, and if you just divided by two, but I couldn't have run his computer. But I could figure that, but I couldn't get out of the store because the clerk couldn't. So they got a pencil and paper, and they figured. And they finally decided what it was. I paid for it and left. But that's just the difference. But you know, another thing that I found came in handy sometimes, knowing a few Bible verses. We had a milk inspector, and he was the most miserable person. I will admit that he did. His face was shaped like a mouse. They all called him Mousy, and the favorite topic of conversation when they got together was what you would do, what they'd like to do to Mousy. But anyway, he came one day, and I happened to peek out and saw him sitting in the car. And he was afraid of dogs, and the dog was sitting there. So we cleaned up all inside. Nobody went out at all. But finally, when I thought things looked reasonable, I went out. And he mentioned this Bible verse, and it was one I was very familiar with. I can't remember what it was. And I said, oh, yes, one of my favorites. Let me see. And I finished it for him. You know that man acted different afterwards? I know it was a strain. He tried. He smiled. And he said a few nice things, and I agreed with him at every turn. We had this great big, it was the side of the milk house, and it stood out from the others about 2 inches. And he says, now, wouldn't that be awful if that fell on one of these little ones' legs? And I said, oh, yes, it would. Afterwards, my son said, that weighs about a ton. Don't you? You don't need to worry about it falling on anybody's legs. But that was the type of conversation we had. But it was that Bible verse that made the difference.
Yeah.
I don't know what his religion was or anything. But we had a common point.
Ask her about what she was honored about.
Okay, so town? A little while ago, you were the Boston Cane. You were given an award for.
Where?
You want to talk about that?
You were given the Boston Cane.
Yes.
Alex would like you to talk a little bit about what that was about.
Oh, that started years ago. I don't know when. They gave it to, I think, all the towns around. Of course, this was part of Massachusetts at one time. And the Boston Cane was always given to the oldest resident in each town. And I don't know, I kept thinking of people I thought were older than I was. But when they got to be my age, they got younger somehow or other. I don't know. But anyhow, they gave it to me at a town meeting one night. And I suppose I'm still the oldest.
People are moving in here all the time.
You know, it doesn't seem possible, but I am 96. I've been going down to that church for 90 years. It's changed a lot. Even their beliefs aren't the same, but mine haven't changed. But all the people that I knew then, of course, are all gone, that were the elders when I was young. But everybody used to walk. I was six when my... it used to be customary, if you needed help, you could get a teenager to come, and they would come and work their board. We had a 14-year-old boy from Brewer. They had a big family. And so we used to walk. My mother was expecting my sister. So we used to walk to Sunday school every Sunday morning. We were meeting in the Grange Hall because the church didn't have a stove, and the Grange Hall did. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? That church was one great big building, and it was one great big room.
Oh, really?
And it had no stove.
Because that building gets cold as is now with the stove and then.
Yes, yes. Of course, the schoolhouse was heated by, the schoolhouse stoves. Those big stoves that they'd set in the middle of the room and people would gather around them. Well, it was a real cold morning one day and we were all gathered around it. And pretty soon, I began to feel kind of warm. And I looked down, and my whole dress, it was a wool serge, so it didn't break into flames. But it was all scorched. It was all crackling and coming apart. I was I wasn't really dressed. And I was careful with stones back to that.
Yeah, I got real close.
I had to go home and change. But that's all the grandchild had was that schoolhouse. And it was when I was first married, the lady's aide started trying to earn a little money and bought a furnace. They borrowed the money from the church funds and put in a furnace and earned money. They'd make aprons and have little fairs, you know, and sell little stuff like that, homemade things. And then, of course, we had the church dinner, and they paid for the furnace, that first furnace that the church had, so you could meet. And then they put in the petition. Oh, so yeah, that you could heat it. And
you think anything else? Is there anything else?
Yes. This was a dairy place, and mostly they took the milk into town. My father delivered milk up by the hospital, those houses up in that area.
So it was individual to houses?
Right. Yes, drive around, you know. He just had cans of milk, and people would come out with their pitchers, and he'd fill their pitchers.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know how we all survived.
No.
But one of the neighbors over here, where that junkyard is, that was a big dairy farm.
Was it?
There was two brothers, the other house, the house on this side burned. But this Lawrence Ring, his name was. This was back at the World War, and when they were drafting everybody, and the day he was going, he drove up on the milk wagon and delivered milk until it was time for him to get on the train. Then he ran down to the station and went. He was gone, I don't know quite how long, probably went 2 to 4 years anyway. He came back, got off the train. He knew where the milk truck should be. He ran right over in that direction, got a ride home, and went right back to farming as if he'd never been away.
Wow.
He was a slick man with my husband for a while. He was quite a bit older than my husband, but you see, that's how people may do. My father worked in the woods before he was married up north, but he could get on a train in Greenville, and he'd go right down to Canton, Massachusetts, and get off right there at his aunt's and spend the night, and then get a ride down to Bangor and get on the trolley car there in Bangor. And his father would meet him down to South Brewer. My folks used to pick peas in the morning and race up to Bangor to the station, put them on, give them to the conductor, And he would go right through to Canton, Massachusetts, and my folks would be eating of that night.
Oh,
wow. Now you couldn't send fresh peas. And
they wouldn't stay fresh by the time they got there.
Even if things were so slow, there were still advantages. The mail couldn't get through here in a snowstorm because they didn't plow this road. My father used to walk out to the corner, the first corner over there. The mailman would leave the paper there and he'd walk out and get the paper. The paper was that important. We had to have it.
Yep. You think of anything else, don't you?
Can you think of anything else you'd like to say about the farm, or?
Well, everybody was farming then, so all their activities centered around farming, and the programs had to do with farming, and people went to the Grange, and the young people especially went to the Grange. That was an opportunity to stay out to then unbelievable times. Because they'd have a Grange meeting, and then they'd have a supper afterwards. And as I told my mother, Mrs. Howard, that I rode with, always helped with the dishes. And of course I would want to help. She'd want me to help too, which I did. And then of course the young people, they had to walk home, which gave a chance for pairing off. And yes, the Grange was important. And after the Grange meeting, everybody played. Were you familiar with Tucker? It was kind of a dance, but you had partners.
Oh.
And that was fun. And then they played five in and seven out and dropped a handkerchief. My father said he was playing and dropped the handkerchief once. And the handkerchief dropped and he was running. And one of the girls from over the way grabbed him by the waistband and she got a thread. And she says, he says, I could feel my pants coming off. I grabbed them with both hands and sashayed right out the door home. But you see, they did have some fun. And we were young. There was a beach over to Sweat's Pond. And we met. We had the minister that we had then when I was just about 16. He organized this club for our education and elevation with the arts, Alpha Mu Lambda, art, music, and literature. So they met every Friday night, and we used to read and we used to sing. We had probably all you could say was that we made a joyful noise because we didn't have any music and I don't know that any of us could really sing. But we met anyway around at people's homes. And of course you had to walk home from that, which, and through the summer we met over to Sweat's Pond. The people that owned that land right there had teenage young people. And we had every kind of a roast you could think of. Marshmallows, corn, weenies. All for our education. And we went on an outing every summer. At first it was just a small outing to up to the top of King's Mountain. They were going there before I was old enough to go. I was a year or two younger than the majority of the teenagers, so I didn't get to go as early as some of them. But anyhow, when the Howards moved up here, when my husband was 19 and his sister was about my age and his other brothers were very close, why, I had a ride to go to all these things. And as Mrs. Howard went, my folks thought that was a good idea. And we'd spend the weekend up on King's Mountain. And then we branched out a little farther and went to Mount Katahdin for the weekend. And the minister and his wife was chaperoned the whole thing. Usually a couple of the parents, a few other parents would go. And by the time my son got old enough, they were going to Washington, D.C. for their outing. I've always thought of this young minister came, and the first thing he was expected to do was take those teenagers to Washington, D.C. But those were some of the local activities that... And then, of course, Old Home Week was a big event.
What kind of stuff did they do for Old Home Week?
What did they?
Did they do the parade and what kind of?
Yes, the town was divided, definite lines. They were invisible, but you know they were there. Like the center of King's Mountain, the line was at the railroad tracks. You were out back if you were this side of the railroad tracks. And then there was south, which South Church, and then the corner, and then there was North Arrington and the chapel. The chapel is gone. And Brewer Lake. And it was just, you stayed in your area, but they were all connected. Like the churches all get together for, like Easter, for the Easter breakfast, and for things like that. So we were all together, separate. It's kind of hard to explain, but
Old Home Week.
Oh, yes.
Tricia was asking about Old Home Week.
Old Home Week. Every church, everyone had a day, and everyone had a supper or a dinner. The center always had a dinner, because we had the regular church dinners. And we usually had a children's afternoon. And then there was a south corner would usually had a supper. And the Grange would always have something. There was something every single day. Mm-hmm. Well, they're trying to revive it. Yep. And of course, they always had the parade, the church. We got the plaque 1 year. It's up. I think it's still hanging up there in the vestry. I don't know, but we got it twice. We had great big barrel trucks that you could hold. I used to think they used to take about 500 small barrels into Boston. So we could have that for a float.
They might not know that you're talking about the Howard Barrel Company, Mom.
Yes, that's the barrel company. Yes, we had the barrel company. My husband and his second brother were partners, and the other brother worked for them. My husband stayed down here and ran the farm, and my brother-in-law and I worked in the barrel company. I used to do their bookkeeping. And they made fish barrels and lobster barrels and potato barrels, if it was a call. Wow. And my husband had no interest in the barrels, and my husband didn't have much, my brother-in-law didn't have much interest in the farm. Yes, that was when I started working at the barrel company when Elizabeth was 6 months old. I had a clothes basket. I put her in and delivered her to my mother. You know, there just wasn't the things to buy. Mm-mm. Well, of course, there was the war when my children were young. When my second one, the war, we joined the war and started sending troops when my second one was born. And you just didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. You didn't complain because there was nothing to complain to.
And you had family come and live with you from Rhode Island on the farm.
Yes, we did.
During the war.
My mother had, that was before, when that was the Depression. You know, we were brought up in the Depression. Everybody talks about it, and now they talk about the Depression. But, you know, we didn't know we were depressed. So we just went about our business, and we were happy. We had hand-me-down clothes. We thought we were lucky. Yes, there's the new fence we got at the school. Gee, why, we were grateful to the town for providing us with a new fence. There's our picture in there, standing with it. But that you weren't tempted to buy, because the stuff wasn't there to buy. I remember the Christmas, we got 2 wooden toy trucks for the boys. We thought that was, well, it was, because there weren't the toys to buy.
Now there's just so much, like, you don't even, there's just so much stuff to get. That.
And people out here, like, I didn't have that good a chance because we didn't get in, things would come into the stores But we would be right there to grab them. And they had an extreme shortage of size 6 little boys' clothes.
No. Love old pictures. It's neat.
But that's it. We had our pleasures, and if they made they had an ice cream social, why we get an ice cream? Gee, we thought that was great. And I personally wasn't deprived because I had 2 little children and they got rations just the same as the adults. So, and besides, I got extra sugar because we had the apple orchard then.
Oh.
We were raising squash for the factory. But now what did the army have against squash? You didn't get any points for raising squash. We went into corn. If you were farming, you had points for what you were doing. Because you see, they drafted all the young men. And we had a milk tester here. He came from England, and he got out of school, and he went down. He was living in the northern part, and he went down to help a farmer on. He was a relative who was farming. Well, once he was on that farm, he had to stay right there. He couldn't leave as long as till after the war was over, because they had to have food. We don't realize how difficult it was in some of those countries. Like my sister worked with a girl. She came from England. She had never eaten meat. They had rations, you know, for meat. And her mother bought cheese or something like that she could get more of than for meat.
Oh.
So she was a vegetarian here. Is there any other portion you like things in town? Practically everybody was a dairy farm. They had some big farms down the main road. And of course out back, that was all farming, dairy.
Her mom came here, and her father working on King Hill.
My husband was very fond of his cows. He knew all their names and their pedigrees. And he could tell you any one of them that if anybody came. We had some here from Japan. They were looking to buy some cattle. And someone told them if they had the white eyelashes, they would be ugly not to buy. And they told them the word, and they were running around looking all of eyelash, eyelash, eyelash. But they did buy. Yes, I had the privilege of wiping Mrs. Rockefeller's boots once. She came here looking for some, she wanted low-grade cows that she was going to put on an island, and she would breed them to she wanted registered ones, but they didn't have to be prize ones because she was just going to raise registered cows just to keep the weeds down again on the island. Anyhow, she walked all through, and when she come to get in her car, her boots were all dirty. So I ran and got some paper towels and we got her all cleaned up.
And she took some chickens, didn't she?
She get some chickens.
Yeah, she asked you about chickens or something.
Oh, yes. We always had chickens.
But they were very nice.
They
were very nice people.
Yes, they were. They were nice.
They came twice, actually.
Yes, I guess they did, because she got several.
And my father didn't get up and go out. He said they were just like anybody else, coming to visit.
Well, yes, they were. We had a milk inspector here, and he wanted to go all over the barn. Well, he went out, and there's the two barns, and there was this big door between. And he planked himself right in the middle of the door, and they were milking. And my son told him that the cows were coming through there. Wouldn't he move to one side? No, he stood right there. Well, he told him three times, or he politely, but did he just... And so my son said, I've had enough of this. And he gave the signal, and those cows come through there. He said he moved right off quick. Because they would come quite fast, because they'd be pushing, and the back ones in back would... They thought that was funny. But you dealt with all people, all kinds of people. The farmers were kind of looked down on by the main road people. But at town, where they'd show their loyalty at town meeting lasted all day, and one of the church out by the town hall would have a dinner, so that the men, women didn't go to town meeting then. Oh, we have changed, haven't we? Well, anyhow, the men went, and the outbackers, they'd all troop right out. And my father'd come home and he'd say, we showed them they're going to spend all this money, but we showed them they're not going to waste our money.
It's true.
But there was one man that... Claude Ryder, he used to come to town meeting, and he'd stand in back with his little pad and pencil. And whenever a question would come up, he would figure out what it would cost, and he would say, now this will cost you so much on your taxes. And people knew what they were doing, and they would vote accordingly how they felt about spending their money. when my husband was a slick man. You see, that was another generation or two. Why, they would divide all the articles, and each slick man was prepared to speak on so many of the articles, so that always someone that knew what the article was about could speak knowledgeably about it. But I don't know if they do that anymore. Yes, I gather that in the olden days, town meeting used to be quite a people that were running for office used to write their name on little pieces of paper and then pass them out to people to put in the ballot box to vote. I remember one, my father wrote his little ballots with an indelible pencil instead of black ink, and they threw him out. And he was annoyed he was mad about that. And another time they caught someone throwing ballots in the fire. Yes, I think town meeting was an exciting event. The evening, the supper conversation was always fraught with interesting things afterwards.
I think there are a lot of
town meeting's kind of quiet now. I haven't been the last 2 or 3 years. I get to be too much for me to go out at anything like that at night.
Yeah.